Like to call the Mobile Source Committee meeting to order for December 15th. You have 9 shopping days till whatever you call it. Could I have the pledge led by Kaplan since she's already standing? Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Can I have the roll call, please?
On the roll for the Mobile Source Committee meeting of December 15th, 2016, Director Avalos.
Here.
Director Groom.
Present.
Director Hudson.
Here.
Director Kaplan.
Here.
Director Miley. Director Mitchoff. Vice Chair Canepa. Chair Haggerty.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Boy, am I going to be in trouble with Miley. I was supposed to pick him up. Yeah.
Miley's here.
He's not, but I'm in trouble. Public comment, a time in which you can speak to anything that is not on today's agenda. I have no speaker's card. Anybody wish to address the board? All right, approval of the minutes for October 27th.
Move approval.
Moved by Hudson, seconded by Kaplan. Any objection to the motion? Motion passed without objection. Moved item 4.
Yes, Chair Haggerty and members of the Mobile Source Committee. This morning, Judy Williams will give the staff presentation on projects and programs contracts over $100,000.
Good morning, Chairperson Haggerty and members of the Mobile Source Committee. I'm here today to present to you Agenda Item 4, which is the consideration of approval of projects with proposed grant awards over $100,000. I'll start by providing some background information and describe the proposed project, and finally I'll conclude with staff recommendations. The district has participated in the Carl Moyer program since 1998. The program is voluntary and aimed to reduce emissions from heavy-duty diesel engines that are not yet regulated. The program is jointly administered by the California Resources Board and local air districts. It provides funding to both public and private entities. In addition to the Carl Moyer program, we have the Mobile Source Incentive Fund, which is the district funding source authorized by Assembly Bill 923. The bill authorized the district to collect an additional $2 DMV registration fee, which can also be used for eligible Carl Moyer projects. On March 16th, the district board of directors approved participation in year 18 of the Carl Moyer program and authorized the executive officer to execute contracts and amendments with grant awards up to $100,000. Before you today for consideration are 3 projects with individual grant awards over $100,000. These projects will replace 1 piece of off-road equipment and 4 marine engines for a proposed allocation of approximately $525,000. These projects will reduce about 2.5 tons of emissions per year. More information on these projects can be found in Attachment 1 of your staff report. These slides, this next chart represents year 18 funding as of November 21st. The charts show allocations by equipment category and county. The total amount of funding allocated to these projects is about $1.4 million. More detailed information on these charts can be found in Attachment 2 of the staff report. These next charts represent the Carl Moyer funding program allocation since 2009. Similar to the previous charts, they are by equipment category and county and total about $127 million. In conclusion, staff request committee recommend the Board of Directors approve Carl Moyer program projects with proposed grant awards over $100,000, as shown in Attachment 1, and authorize the Executive Officer, APCO, to enter into agreements with applicants for the recommended projects. This concludes my presentation. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Well, then seeing no questions, is there Hudson View? Moved by Kaplan, second by Mitchoff. Is there any objection to the motion? That motion will pass without objection. Move to item 5. Agenda item 5 this morning is the update on the results of our audit for fiscal year ending 2005, and Ken Mack will lead us through that presentation.
Right. Good morning, Chair Haggerty and members of the Mobile Source Committee. So today I'll be going over the fiscal year ending 2015 TFCA audit results. Some background on the presentation. I'll provide background on TFCA. I'll go over the audit 17 in more detail, including the process and their findings. And again, this is an informational item, so there are no recommendations. So some background on TFCA. This is one of the district's primary grant revenue sources, and it's funded by DMV revenues. The funding is split with 60% being awarded directly by the Air District as part of the regional fund, and 40% is passed through to the individual counties. An audit of all TFCA-funded projects is required by the Health and Safety Code every 2 years, and this audit encompasses both projects as part of the 60% as well as the 40%. So in total, 140 projects were audited, which accounts for over $28 million of funding. The audit was performed by Gilbert Associates, which was selected by the Board of Directors to perform auditing services for the district on February 18th of 2015. So to be clear, these are fiscal audits, meaning that their primary objective is to ensure that TFCA funds were expended in accordance with the contractual obligations and to see whether other basic contractual obligations were met. The audits are not designed to look at emission reductions or cost effectiveness, and the Air District does that directly, and you'll hear more about that on the next agenda item. So moving on to the result, we had no findings for the county program manager projects, and on the regional fund side, we had a single finding for late reports for the regional projects. And this is the fewest number of findings we've ever had in 20 years of auditing this program. So in terms of numbers, there were a total of 6 late reports, and I'd like to point out that 3 of those came from the Pilot Bright Share program, which the project sponsor of that project had some unique reporting requirements.
Had what?
Some unique reporting requirements.
Will you expand on that? Are you going to expand on that?
Yeah, for the bicycle share program, we're talking about reporting for all of the bicycles, very voluminous reports, and there was some back and forth between them and the Air District on the content of that reporting. Not your typical reporting. And again, a fairly complicated and some interaction between the Air District and the project sponsor. So some mitigating circumstances. Again, you know, we would have preferred that the reports had been filed on time, but we are talking about three quarterly reports over 140 projects. So, somebody who has since left the program. So it makes it fairly difficult for us to have any leverage there.
So, I'm sorry, was it the old bike share project, the new bike share project?
The old bike share project, the original, the pilot.
Okay. Okay, go ahead, Rebecca.
Thank you for sharing that. And if part of the finding is that, well, we're not so mad at them for being late because we're requiring these incredibly voluminous reports on bicycles. Have we considered looking at what we're requiring and whether the magnitude of what we're requiring is realistic for programs like that?
I would say that relative to the pilot project, we gathered a lot of information. In hindsight, maybe we didn't need all of that information, but that's how the auditors look at this is they look at what's exactly in the letter of the contract.
No, I'm not asking from the auditor's perspective. Yeah. I'm saying, should we require less voluminous paperwork going forward, given that you're now saying we've determined that it seemed like it might have been excessive?
Well, if we ever do another bicycle share program, we'd probably approach it a little bit differently.
Oh, so we're not continuing this?
No, that project has been passed off to the Metropolitan Transportation Commission.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Ms.
Kinda.
Okay, so in the past 5 years, we've taken steps to make reporting a more streamlined process for grantees. And we've transitioned to our online reporting tool, so there's less paperwork. And we've been emphasizing the reporting requirements and reminding project sponsors when reports are due. On the other hand, we've also begun to enforce consequences for submitting late reports, and that includes withholding funding and barring grantees from applying for funding in the future. And through these steps, we've made some significant progress in reducing the number of late reports. And percentage-wise, both the number of findings and the percentage of grantees with findings have been steadily decreasing over the past five audits. So that concludes my presentation, and I'll be happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Just one.
Go ahead, Mitchell.
Thank you. I see these are done annually. A lot of audits aren't done annually. Is there a reason it has to be done annually? Is that part of the legal requirements?
It
just takes a lot of staff time, I would think.
Legally, we're required to do it every 2 years. That's what the legislation says. We do it annually because of the sheer volume of projects.
It's just easier to
do. 140 projects. If we let it pile up over 2 years, you're into the 200, 300 projects. So
okay. Thank you.
So I noticed that, and I don't know if this is kind of germane to the audit, but I'm going to try it. I noticed that in here, allowable projects is the, I think it's the CNG buses. And I'm going to try to use this as a way to get at a question, but how are we doing with the tank replacements on the CNG buses?
At the board's request a couple of years ago, we did open funding for replacement of those tanks, and we continue to fund them. We came back to the board, I think, as late as September with an additional $1.5 million to do that. At that particular time, the board had requested that we come back to them with a report on that, and it is our intention to do that in the new year. We do need to allocate some more funding there, and our plan is to give you a complete report out on a couple of things. You had requested that we look at the number of buses that had the tanks, the numbers that needed replacement, and where we were in that cycle. And it's our intention to come back to you with that.
So you're going to get... Are we caught up, or is everybody aware of it? Or my fear is there's districts out there that don't even know they're supposed to do this replacement.
So I think the DOT is fairly aggressive in terms of telling them that there's a requirement that those tanks are replaced every 15 years, just based on the wear and tear on the tanks themselves. I think our feeling is that we've done a fairly good job in terms of outreach. We are in contact with all of the major school bus companies and the folks who provide these services, and they've gotten a lot of grant funding from us, right? So we feel like we are talking to the right people, but we will, as part of that report, come back to you and let you know where we think we are in the curve, and if we do need to do additional outreach, we may ask for your help as board members to do that. But right now, I think our feeling is that we've done a pretty good outreach, and folks know that this program is there, and they've been availing themselves of the tank replacements.
Okay. And then I believe in the staff report, I'm kind of looking for it again, but I think I just found it. I believe that I did read that we used Gilbert and Associates for the audit. How often do we use them, and how often do we change?
So we have used them, I think, for the last four audits, and we did do an RFP 2.5 years ago, so it's about time that we do another one. We generally do an RFP for new consultants to do our auditing every 3 years, and that's for both the Air District's single audit and for this program, we combine them. So it is about time to redo that outreach, and I think, is it this year or next year? Next year. So when we brought this to the board of directors, we confirmed that Gilbert would be our auditors for the single audit and for this program. And then based on performance, we have the ability to extend that contract twice And then the year after next, we will go out for a full RFP for new auditors for both programs.
So will Gilbert and Associates, and I don't even know them, so it's not like I have any axe to grind with them or anything. I'm just asking these questions. Do they have the ability to bid again, or are they precluded from bidding?
We haven't done that in the past. We always let our current auditors rebid on the projects. But we have, I think in the last 10 years, we've changed auditing firms at least on two occasions, to my knowledge. So we do change them periodically. One of the things I think you look for in an audit firm is some folks who are familiar with the program. That's an advantage. But you do want to change them up periodically based on the fact that the first set of eyes always catches some things that you may not have been paying attention to. Right. So it's something we'll be looking at as part of the next recommendations that we bring back to the board.
Okay, so that's fine. So as I understood, this is an informational item, but do you want a motion to receive and file?
We don't need it, but it...
Okay, I have a motion to receive and file, or motion and a second. Is there any objection to the motion? Motion passed without objection, noting that Supervisor Miley's here. Move to item six.
Agenda item six is where we annually report out to the board at this time of the year as required by legislation on the cost effectiveness of our program. And Karen Skolnick will lead us through the presentation for the... Oh, sorry, Linda. I wasn't looking up. Linda will lead us through the presentation. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, Chair Haggerty and members of the Mobile Source Committee. During this presentation, I will provide a background on the TFCA program, identify key highlights from the report, and open it up to questions and answers at the end of the presentation. As mentioned in the previous presentation, the TFCA program is funded by a $4 motor vehicle registration fee. The TFCA authorizing legislation requires that a public meeting be held annually to review the effectiveness of the TFCA expenditures in improving air quality. This report focuses on the 60% TFCA portion that goes to the regional fund projects and the air district sponsored programs. Here are the key findings from the report. The report is a summary of projects and programs with various start dates that all closed during fiscal year ending 2016. A total of 42 projects and programs were closed during that fiscal year, which can be found in Attachment A of the staff report. The total TFCA expenditures is about $8.6 million. We spent 53% on regional fund projects, 37% on the air district sponsored programs, and about $826,000 in administrative and audit costs. With respect to the effectiveness and air quality benefits, we evaluated the emissions reductions in terms of particulate matter, nitrogen oxides, and reactive organic acids, and found that over their lifetime, these 42 projects and programs will reduce an estimated 204 tons of criteria pollutants and over 91,000 tons of greenhouse gas emissions. Additionally, we found that these funds were allocated to eligible projects and programs as allowed by the legislation. Out of the 42 projects and programs that were evaluated, we also found that the overall combined average lifetime cost effectiveness is approximately $37,000 per ton of emissions reduced. Of those 42 projects and programs, we found that 8 either did not meet the cost effectiveness limit or the cost effectiveness limit cannot be determined. This includes 6 shuttle trip reduction projects, the enhanced mobile source inspections program, and 1 smart growth project. With respect to shuttle projects, staff has discussed the challenges of these projects to the committee on numerous occasions. In response, the board has continued to approve increases in the cost effectiveness limit each year in order to maintain the same funding level. With respect to the enhanced mobile source inspections program, this program consists of a variety of strategies, including enforcement of smoking vehicles, inspections of drayage trucks at the Port of Oakland, and recently enforcement of the new commuter benefits program. The overall trend that we've seen with this program is that the number of reported smoking vehicles has dramatically decreased. This means that the fleet is getting cleaner, which is great. However, it also means that the program is no longer effective in reducing emissions at its current funding amount. Recognizing this, staff will work with the enforcement team to discuss strategies for reducing funding for the next year and future years. Finally, in addition to the emissions and greenhouse gas reductions, we found that there are other public health benefits. These include conserving energy, reducing traffic congestion, expanding access to first and last mile connections to rail, ferry, and mass transit, and facilitating active mode choices. This chart shows the distribution of funding by project category. Shuttle and trip reduction projects account for the majority of expenditures, followed by the Spare the Air program and then by the Enhanced Mobile Source Inspections program. These three programs account for 78% of the funds. So this table summarizes the expenditures, emissions reduced, and cost effectiveness for each project and program category. For each of these 42 projects and programs, we conducted both pre- and post-project cost-effectiveness evaluation, which is expressed here in TFCA dollars per ton of emissions reduced. Again, the combined average lifetime cost-effectiveness is approximately $37,000 per ton of emissions reduced. And this concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions.
I remembered, sort of.
Director Hudson.
Sorry I grabbed the wrong agenda. I can tell you anything you want about tomorrow mornings. But there's a paragraph in there, and it talks about you didn't get the results you thought you were going to get, or it wasn't clear, and that you may go out to bid or look for someone independent to analyze, and I don't know if it's the smart growth component or something else. I think I'm on this one. And I was thinking at the time, I go, so much of this, when you start talking smart growth or transit livable community, lends back into the sustainable community strategy. And I'm wondering if it isn't something to touch base with MTC, what they're looking for in that, one, or two, try and get three or four different contractors on call for whenever you need them. If along the same lines of the question Chair Haggerty was asking about Gilbert and Associates, when do we rotate out of it? Because frankly, if it's confusing to you, I don't have a lot of confidence in picking one company and guessing that we got the right one, that it isn't confusing to them. They just have better salesmen.
I think that's a good point. The thing about the sustainable community strategy is when they've got questions about air quality, they call us. So this is an area where the reasons that we can't do it, it's very hard to put tangible benefits on you know, the smart growth and how we do some of these. You know, we do surveys, we contact the communities, we look at what they've implemented. But in a lot of cases, we may not have baselines for those communities, so we can't tell how much emissions have actually been reduced. So what we've done, I think, by policy and what the committee and the board has done is we've kind of moved away from those projects to stuff that is basically more quantifiable. And this is the last remainder of those smart growth projects that are kind of going through the system. We have those projects and they're phasing out. Like we used to do traffic calming projects through this program as well. you know, signal lights, timing. But again, very hard to quantify those projects, and we've moved away from those over time. So what you're seeing here in this report is the last of those projects being reported out, and we're trying to come back and give you an idea as to how cost-effective they were.
If I could follow up on it, what I see is you have nothing, and I don't need you to bring it back up, but you have nothing in the smart growth category, but you go up and you look at shuttle, and it's at 39% or it's up. And I think that's where a lot of this is going, particularly in what's happening, going to happen in my city if he adds 5,000 homes around there. They're all going to be in the shuttle. So you don't give anything credit to the smart growth, but it all goes to the shuttle. Or kind of reminds me of that carbon sequestration problem. Who gets the credit for the darn thing?
I think that's a good point. The reason that you see things like that is because, again, it's very easy for us to know, quantify that at the tailpipe. Whereas with the smart growth project, did the community actually move there? Did they drive more? Did they drive less? Did they use shuttles more? Did they walk more? All things that we'd have to determine by survey, and basically the resources for us. We could spend a lot of time doing it, but because we're phasing out those projects, we've chosen not to, to spend the resources in this case.
I got Groom and then Kaplan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought I heard you say that you were going to reduce expenditures, and if you do, or cut programs, and if that is the case, where does that money go? Or
so we're talking about the enhanced mobile source incentives or inspection program. In that program, year after year, we see the number of vehicles being reported declining. Last year, we had 2,495 vehicles reported. I think that's down about 80% from when we started the actual program 5 years ago. We see that the fleet is cleaning up. As we do those programs, we don't like to change the metrics, right? We like to report apples to apples so that you as a board can see over time how effective that program is. Last year, we had 49 of those vehicles reported back to us being repaired. We think the percentage is probably far higher based on the letters that we send out, but we kept the same reporting methodology. What we are seeing, though, is the numbers of complaints are going down. The number of reports coming in for our inspectors who are patrolling for these vehicles is going down. So I think at this point, we need to come back to you in our February timeframe, where we lay out the funding for the next year for the TFCA program, with some recommendations possibly to phase out this program.
Do you get to keep the money, or does it go to another program, or does it have to be returned to the source?
No, we would take the funding and distribute it throughout the TFCA okay. pool. So
that's what I wanted okay. to hear.
Yeah. All right. One thing about that particular program is we probably won't phase it out 100%, because I think the public still will continue to report those vehicles. So I think we'll need to still support it in our radio telephone room, and you'll see us come back for that funding. But maybe our active patrols in the field are not as necessary as they okay. might have been 5 years ago.
Thank you very much.
Director Kaplan.
Thank you. Yes, in terms of the enhanced mobile source inspections, obviously if there are less and less problem vehicles, then it makes sense that the program would be less effective and would make sense at some point to phase out. I have heard that in other states they're doing detectors by the side of the road that detect non-compliant vehicles. Have we looked at that?
So there's a couple of different programs. We do have near roadway monitoring, right? But that doesn't detect vehicles. It allows us to gauge the emissions from the overall fleet and match that against our projections. We do work with the California Air Resources Board, which means that we do do vehicle stops at the Port of Oakland, and we do measure, you know, tailpipe emissions from those vehicles. The California Air Resources Board does do opacity tests on trucks and large emitters at truck stops. So there's a number of those programs. What I think you're referring to is one stage South Coast Air Quality Management District did look at installing some technology that would identify vehicles as they pulled up at traffic lights.
Mm-hmm. Right, they can detect individual non-compliant
yeah.
vehicles.
We don't have the authority to enforce that anymore.
Oh,
when the Air District began in the 1950s, we actually had a vehicle patrol and we would pull people over and do stops for excessive emissions. Obviously, we didn't have guns and we didn't have badges, so that became problematic as we went into the 1960s, and that authority was actually transferred to the California Highway Patrol. So they have the authority to do stops for vehicles.
Okay.
So that's the answer to your question. We could provide them with that data, but I think that in regards to the volume of enforcement they have to do, it probably would be a low priority for them.
Okay. And in terms of smart growth, and maybe this is something we can talk about more next year when we look at how we go forward, because there certainly has been national data that suggests that having people live in housing near transit does dramatically reduce their driving. And so if it's just a problem of how do we collect the data, in other words, a program that might actually be very effective, but we don't have good data to track its effectiveness, it would be a shame to therefore not do it when it might be very effective. And I know that for some of the other things we use averages, right? So when you're talking about a carpool program and you calculate the tons of emissions reduced by the car that isn't driving, you don't actually go measure the car that isn't driving. You use averages. So maybe there's some way to look at what other jurisdictions have looked at or other norms around smart growth to come up with some way to look at some of those projects that actually might be really effective. Because if a program is good, we just don't have good data, it would be a shame to then...
I think our feeling as staff is that, the mobile source projects that we do, it's very hard to beat them. Their cost effectiveness is like in the $9,000 per ton of emissions reduced en masse, right? You can see here for the TFCA program, those numbers are slightly higher, but they're still in the 50,000s. When we did calculate some of the cost effectiveness from the smart growth projects, they were far, far higher than that. And that's why we've kind of turned to those other projects. It's not that we don't support that. You'll see in our plan that we're bringing forward, our clean air plan, that smart growth is a large component of it. It's just that there are folks who are better positioned with better funding to actually take care of that. One of the examples would be MTC in their sustainable community strategy. That's a large component of it, and they obviously have the wherewithal and funding to take care of that. We're talking about $11 million versus $4 billion. It's kind of maybe we could spend, and I think that's where we as staff has gone. We're trying to spend the little funding that we have as effectively as possible. More bang for the buck.
Thanks. Sometimes the chair has questions. I have a motion. Second. Motion and second under discussion. Under Appendix A, a couple questions. Noting that LAVDA, I guess in fiscal year 2016, spent $86,000, and then it shows not to be cost effective. Are you following me?
Yep.
And then I can't help but notice the city of Oakland then spent $378,000 on streetscape, and the cost effectiveness on that, or the weighted tons, can't be determined. And then City of Richmond spent, I think, $250,000. I got to find it.
Okay.
Where is that one? Somebody help me. City of Richmond, where is it?
That, I think that's the shuttle project.
The commuter shuttle was, $129,000.
Uh-huh.
That was expended too, and deemed not cost effective, which I'm sure, and the two not cost effectives, you know what it was.
Yes.
You just chose not to show us because it was so pitiful. What happens here? I mean... And how, yeah. And then I have to ask, the risk of Rebecca going ballistic, but mm-hmm. How do we spend $378,000 on plants and trees?
Mm-hmm. Well, okay.
But seriously, how do we allow that?
That's what the expenditure is described as here. But what that is it is designed to be a traffic calming project. It's like when we narrow a roadway, when we put bicycle lanes in, when we put time traffic lights. All of those measures are designed to reduce emissions.
Project?
I believe that was a traffic calming project, and we can get you more information on it. But that's why you see that.
Can you report back to this committee what that was? Because absolutely. Right now I view it as some pretty trees and some shrubs.
Okay.
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 What actually happens to that money? I mean, let's use in the case of Labda. I mean, Labda, they obviously. I mean, I'm very familiar with that rapid project, and I know it's been a real problem from the very beginning. But that's just money we put in, and it just didn't happen.
What happens is that they give us a project plan, and they say, "Well, we're going to have 200 riders per month, let's say." And what happens is we 200 riders per day, right?
Thank you.
So we judge the project and we give them a cost effectiveness based on that. We come back, we do a survey, they report the data to us, and guess what? It's 86 riders per day, or 90 riders per day. So they're not achieving the cost effectiveness that they promised us. We look at, with that ridership, how much emissions were reduced, and then we calculate the cost based on tailpipe emissions in dollars per ton of emissions reduced, and that's the numbers that you see here. So that's not necessarily to say that is a bad project. It's just a bad project in this time frame. As it closed out, ridership may have improved, and we may have continued to fund it. We try and do this to give you a perspective on a couple of different things. That project may have been judged at $90,000 per ton of emissions reduced. We may not have raised the cost effectiveness for the LAFTA project at that particular time. Rules change over a period of time, but what we try to do is we try and freeze that project in time. We say under the rules that we had at the time from the board of directors, this project was not cost effective. Here's how much it cost. Now, when we come back and we say, well, it was $85,000 per ton or $119,000 per ton of emissions reduced, that project may look pretty good based on where we set the bar today. But just in this time frame, it was not a cost-effective project. And as I said, we try not to move the goalposts without letting you know that we've made a change to the calculation methodology. So this is consistent with the reports that we've been giving you over the previous years.
Okay. I do have to say, though, Damien, I just really can't believe that we allowed... Are these program manager... These are district-sponsored funds, right, in Appendix A?
Yes.
So these are regional funds?
Correct.
I just can't believe we let money go out not knowing what the per ton would be.
I
can't believe this cannot be determined. I'm having a hard time with that.
Okay.
Because you wouldn't allow that to go out if you couldn't determine what the cost effectiveness would have been.
Karen, do you want to?
Because I know how y'all are.
You want some shrubs.
Sure.
I don't want shrubs.
Yeah. In this particular project, it did involve a series of different, as Damien mentioned, traffic calming and improvements, roadway improvements. And so I think earlier Damien also mentioned that these are projects that are, they affect a large area, and it is very difficult to accurately or effectively measure the difference. And so a lot of what comes back is we rely on the data. We don't have consultants that provide this. We rely on the data for all of our projects that's provided by the sponsors. And so depending on the data that you get, that they gather, you can either do an okay determination for these kinds of projects, or it just becomes very difficult and we don't have confidence around the numbers that we end up with, which is why we just report it cannot be determined. And as Damien mentioned, the TFCA is very limited. We really only have about $11 million of new funds every year, and the need in the region is huge. And so we really have, over time, focused the funds on projects where we can do a better job of spending the funds quickly on time, that don't have a lot of delays in construction like these projects typically do, and also projects where we with very little effort on the part of the sponsors, can come up with an accurate determination of the cost effectiveness.
One other thing.
Right, and it was based on the, right, Gene is mentioning that when we evaluated the project initially, and that's where we give the go-ahead on the front end, there are rules and requirements, and so based on the information that is provided by the sponsor at that time, we are able to run the evaluation. However, if we don't get that kind of data on the back end, we're just not able to complete the report.
Don't misunderstand me. I appreciate the spirit. I just, whenever I brought a project forward, I don't remember ever being able to say, trust me.
I do think that we do that, though. You know,
I'm going to remember those words in the future.
It's not so much trust me. We get a report from the sponsor that says we're going to reduce X amounts of rides, and then we as staff go, is that realistic? Yes or no?
Okay. All right. Look, I have a motion in a second. If there's no other questions. There are no other questions. Anybody wish to speak on this item? All right, so I have a motion and a second. Is there any objection to the motion? The motion will pass without objection. I'm feverishly trying to get back to the agenda. If somebody wants to throw one at me, that's good. All right, motion passed without objection. Committee member comments? Time and place in the next meeting. You have a committee member comment?
Yes.
Of course you do. You have one on every agenda.
No, I'm going to try it again, because every time this comes up and we talk about the needs for the most part, I think everyone is saying the same thing. We spend this money well. Just every once in a while, we question it, which just means we want it spent weller. And I'm looking at, and I swear I do this every year, so this is not new. We've got $4 for the surcharge. And it's been $4 for whatever. So it's probably worth $3, $2.50 now. And I go, when are we going to look at it? Getting a legislator to take a look at some additional money. Well, I'd like you to look at additional one. The split is 60-40. An additional $2 split 50-50 and see if we can even get the counties behind it or something like that. What is it going to take to get more money into a program that works? I know everybody in my group doesn't want to spend any more money for taxes or fees, but we do see value, and I see value in this program. I'd like to see it upped as we go into the shuttle era.
All right, time and place of the next meeting may be January 26th here at 9:30, although as we adjourn, the next meeting shall be at the call of the committee chair. So here we go. Yeah. Meeting is adjourned, but shall be adjourned by the committee chair, unless somebody else wants to adjourn it, but I'm going to. Happy holidays.
Thank you.